right, you are listening to FreeRadioDallas.net. This is Our Lib Radio. We have a special show tonight. We will be receiving a phone interview from Simone of Austin Indie Media Center, who has actively been involved with the current situation in Mexico. If you want to get a little bit of a background on what's going on in Mexico currently, check out austin.indiemedia.org, and they have a lot in depth there. But this is Assad. T-Tree and Garibu Steve should be here shortly. Meanwhile, let me put in a CD here. Alright, this is a band that you all must respect because they kick so much ass. This is the Fugazi. Yeah. Wrong song. Wrong song again. There we go. Stay tuned. All right, you're listening to FreeRadioDallas.net. Joining us today is Simone from Austin Independent Media Center. Can you hear us all right? Yeah, hold on 1 second.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you good.
Yeah, I can barely hear y'all, though.
Alright, let me fix it real fast.
Well, look, just speak a little loud and we can do this.
Alright. Hold on 1 second. Alright, can you hear me good now? All right, 1 second.
What's up?
Hello?
Yeah, okay, there we go.
All right.
We go outside, that's better.
All right, cool. Okay. We don't really have much money here, so...
Yeah, yeah, I'm with that.
All right, we're speaking with Simone from Austin Independent Media Center. He's been actively involved with a developing situation, and how do you pronounce this? Yeah, and he's been involved with that actively. He's actually been there and witnessed firsthand some of the stuff that has been going on there the past few years. So I'd like to welcome you to the show. I just have a few questions, then we can go from there and get everything covered as much as possible. So basically, just to start off, for people who are not too familiar with what's going on, can you just, give the basics of what's going on and what the current situation is and why this is happening now?
Okay, well, currently there's been a change of office in the governorship of the state of Oaxaca over the last, I guess it was about 3.5 weeks ago, they got a new governor. And Mexico is divided politically in many different ways, but the party that is known for having 70 years of political domination in Mexico is the PRI, the Institutional Revolutionary Party. And they've continued to remain in control of Oaxaca while the executive branch has been taken over by the PAN, the National Action Party. Can you all still hear me all right?
Yeah.
Okay. And the National Action Party is run by Vicente Fox, for anybody that uses the Mexican politics. And he's like Mexico's very first Bill Clinton after 70 years of Ronald Reagan, right?
Yeah.
But the state of Oaxaca is still very much so Ronald Reagan's dialee, and the current governor has come into office and basically began to clean the house in terms of activists in the region.
Yeah.
And the majority of the activists in the region are indigenous peasant farm workers or syndicalist unions of campesinos, just basically peasant farm worker communities, right?
Yeah.
And the way that they organize 9 times out of 10 in Oaxaca is through their indigenous forms of organization. So they don't believe in political parties. They don't believe in a structured form of government. They have what I guess could be somewhat described as like an anarchist foundation, but it's really not anarchist. It's indigenous. It's a cultural foundation that they had for thousands of years. And, but I guess the closest thing that you could maybe align it with would be anarchism. So we call, like, academically, you could call these groups, a lot of them, anarcho-indigenous groups, right? And some of these groups push the limits of what the PRI is willing to allow to happen. So the PRI will come in and impose, say, like a mayor or a county commissioner in a community. And these anarcho-indigenous groups will rise up against that. In this case, it's not with arms. They're using basically sticks and stones. And what happened was a mayor was imposed upon the community, and the community refused to work with the mayor on any community projects, like building roads or anything like that. The community usually participates in those types of things with funds from the mayor, but they didn't want to take any government money.
Yeah.
So they initiated their own mechanism for autonomy, for building their own roads, for building their own schools. And in this case, they were building a town hall. And the mayor called his buddy, the governor, who, the name of the governor is Ulises Ruiz Ortiz. And he had state troopers that, in Oaxaca, the state troopers are militarized, they have machine guns. He ordered them into daylight opened fire on community members while they were having a communal work day. Now, this is very this is very common in Mexico. This happens a lot more often than people realize. In the name of free trade, in the name of business, in the name of natural and human resource extraction from Mexico, there's mafias, political business, and in some cases even narcotics mafias that are interrelated with one another that engage in these types of activities.
Yeah.
Well, the community that was fired upon, only three people actually got shot, and nobody died. Those three people were arrested and, of course, charged with assault on a police officer. And the rest of the community turned on the state police and with sticks, rocks, and bricks basically fought off the state police and managed to prevent a massacre, which was their intention.
Yeah.
Oftentimes when these massacres happen, it's paid civilians that try to instigate them or to commit the massacre, but in this case it was actually uniformed police officers, so that does change things a little bit. So the community that was attacked, its name is Santiago Xaniga, and they're part of an organization called CODETI, which is Committee Organized in Defense of the Rights of the Indigenous. And CODETI is part of a larger network of what you could call a narco-syndicalist indigenous organization throughout the state of Oaxaca called COMBA, which is the anti-neoliberal popular Magonista Oaxacan coordination. Now, COMBA encompasses 300 communities from around the state, and as a result of these atrocities in Santiago Xaniga, COMBA mobilized a caravan / march to Mexico City. The attempted massacre happened on January 15th, and by January...
Wait, this is January 15th, 2005, right?
2005.
Yeah.
That's right.
A few weeks ago.
And by January 18th, 2005, COMBA had several community members in Mexico City, and they began a permanent sit-in at the nation's capital, which is like basically camping out in the nation's capital.
Yeah.
In the yard, right? And COMBA arranged a meeting with the National Commission of Human Rights, which would basically be the equivalent to the Justice Department's Human Rights Commission, right? The State Department's Human Rights Commission, which is really just a front. But they set up an appointment with this guy, and his name is José Luis Soberanes, and he's the president of the National Human Rights Commission. And José Luis Soberanes set up an appointment between COMBA and the Oaxacan state governor for 3 days later to have a dialogue about this situation.
Uh-huh.
And this is where things begin to get a little bit more interesting. So far, we have three people that were detained from Santiago Xaniga, and their names are Abraham Ramirez Vasquez, Juventino Garcia Cruz, and Noel Garcia Cruz. And when COMBA arranged this meeting with the governor, that was on February the 3rd of 2005, just last Thursday. And three individuals ended up getting arrested that day as a result of the meeting. What happened was COMBA leaders went to a specified hotel to meet the Secretary of Governance, basically the governor's secretary, whose name is Joaquin Rodriguez Palacios. Uh-huh. That's like basically like the lieutenant governor of Oaxaca. And they met him to set the agenda for their meeting with the governor, who again is Ulises Ruiz Ortiz. And they met him in a hotel, and there were three COMBA leaders that met him in a hotel, among them Alejandro Cruz Lopez, a good friend of mine, and other Indian media reporters. And when they left the meeting with the Secretary of Governance, all three were arrested in the parking lot by state preventative police again. Two of the three were released immediately because we already have them on Amnesty International list for getting threats from the local state government.
Yeah.
And Alejandro Cruz Lopez ended up remaining detained and transferred to a prison. Two more COMBA leaders left the scene, not the same ones that had been detained, but two more that witnessed it, left the scene and went to their office to make phone calls to the National Human Rights Commission and the press. And their names are Samuel Hernandez Morales and Jacqueline Lopez Almazan. And they, too, in their office, they were surrounded by state police
Yeah.
That's the short version.
Well, before I get into my set of questions, I'd like to announce that DJ W.
I'm sorry, you're gonna have to speak up. I can barely hear you.
Oh, I'm just saying. Someone joined us here today. I don't know what she wants to go by, but.
Oh, hi, Maya.
We have to speak in. I'm not sure he can hear you well, so.
Oh, sorry. My name's Maya. I just kind of jumped in here. I came in the middle.
Yeah, all right. Well, she's here. I just like to remind people you're listening to FreeRadioDallas.net. We're talking to Simone from Austin Indie Media Center. If you would like to contact us or ask him a question, you can hit us up on AOL Instant Messenger. Our screen name is Free Radio Dallas. Or join us in our Indie Media IRC chat, which is irc.indiemedia.org. And go ahead and type in the number symbol FRD, and you can join us. So, back to are you still able to hear us?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, I've definitely seen, I've been reading a lot, and I have noticed that Austin Independent Media Center has been actively involved with what's going on in Mexico. Would you care to explain, you know, why Austin Indie Media?
Well, it's not really a question of why Austin Indie Media, but rather really Indie Media as a network.
Yeah.
A lot of people forget the history of it, but it was born, or the question of it, or the need from it, was really addressed very passionately with the Zapatista uprising in 1994.
Yeah.
People consider Indie Media's birth being the WTO protest in Seattle in 1999, when granted that was the first independent media center in the United States, which has now spawned the independent media network. But with the Zapatista uprising in southern Mexico, and I just really learned this myself from a fellow indie IMCista, right, that told me a little bit about this history, and it made the perfect sense. When the Zapatistas rose up in arms, they put down their arms and made a peace accord with the government and had the first Intercontinental Congress, invited people from all over the world to come to their communities and discuss their plight, right?
Yeah.
The Zapatistas' basic argument was that, look, we are in the most marginalized, most darkened corners of this reality, of this world, and people don't even know that we're here. And the only way that we can be heard is by rising up in arms, and then people begin to listen to us. And only then are we able to put down our arms after we're heard. So what we need now that we have put down our arms is for people in the northern industrialized countries of this world to put together basically ghetto technologies, as simple of technologies, as appropriate as technologies as possible for movements like ours, so people can get direct information about our existence, not only here in Chiapas, Mexico, but in South Africa, in Asia, in you know, all over the world where people are marginalized. Silent, voiceless, faceless, independent media was an idea for having their voices heard. So by 1999, a lot of the people that set up the first independent media center were at that first Intercontinental Congress in Chiapas, listening to Marco's words, and they heard about the World Trade Organization meeting in Seattle, and people were organizing around it, and everybody knew that the third world had, or underserved communities around the world had grievances against the World Trade Organization that were not going to be heard in the corporate media. They were not going to be heard anywhere but in these hidden corners of what was the young indie media.
Yeah.
And an independent media center, people also knew that there were going to be huge, crazy protests in the streets that day. They would also not make it into the corporate media.
Well, we got a question from a listener. He wanted to know, he says the real question is, why just indie media?
Why, definitely not just indie media. I don't think that that it should be just indie media. If that's what the question refers, I don't think it should be. As a matter of fact, I feel that we need to go well beyond indie media.
Well, I think that what he was trying to say is, why do you not hear about the Zapatistas and what's going on recently in Mexico? Why don't you hear about that on CNN?
Okay, that makes more sense. Yeah. Sorry. that would corporate media is owned and controlled by the very individuals that are profiting from the occupation of communities around the world. What this has to do with, in essence, in Mexico, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Colombia, and in ghettos in our own country, it has to do with the occupation of communities of color. And what is at stake in the occupation of communities of color is natural resources, right? So in Iraq, everybody knows you have oil. In Afghanistan, people forget you have opium. In Colombia, you have cocaine, right? In Mexico, in southern Mexico, you have petroleum and water and gold and silver. In South Africa, you had diamonds.
Yeah.
In Grenada, you had nutmeg. 98% of the world's nutmeg, but nutmeg nonetheless. So all these occupations, be them military, like in Iraq and Afghanistan and Colombia, or be them political and economic, like in Mexico, or be them political, economic, social, cultural, spiritual, psychological, in ghettos in this country, through cultural gentrification, through police brutality, through the influx of narcotics in those neighborhoods, it's an occupation. And the mainstream media is owned by the people that are occupying these natural and human resources around
yeah.
the world. It's a violent occupation. They're not going to eat themselves alive.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. It's basically, you know, it's whatever the media can do to make, you know, whatever. Well, the myth of the liberal media is that, you know, we're there, we're making the war in Iraq look really bad, but, you know.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Well, I'm just saying, people are saying right now we have a liberal media, and then when we argue that, no, it's not liberal, they turn them, like, say stuff like, hey, look at the war in Iraq. You know, they'll cover the prison beatings, the tortures there, but they won't cover a successful election. So that's their argument, basically.
Yeah, I don't know. The main reason for me, especially in Mexico, the Zapatistas not making it into the mainstream media. Situations like this situation in Oaxaca, I mean, you'd think it'd be ear spotted. It's our closest neighbor. It's
yeah.
our closest trading partner. It should serve as the example of how neoliberalism or market economics works to help underserved countries in this world, but it doesn't. It doesn't serve as an example. There's places in this country that are devastated by market economics, that are devastated by the influx of transgenic corn, that have massacres and kidnappings and rapes and disappearances on a regular basis because
yeah.
the government is occupying their land for their natural resources and pushing the people into the cities to work in factories making jeans that we buy for $40 a pair.
Yeah. So, well, I understood that you've actually, you've been down there, and weren't you, you witnessed firsthand what was going on there in the past 2 years?
Two Austin Independent Media reporters, current Austin Independent Media reporters, actually kind of got us into reporting for the media back then, were expelled from Mexico. We were actually detained and given 3 days to leave the country. Compa had just been born at that time, and they occupied the front entrance of the state capital there in Oaxaca City, and they occupied it for 3.5 months in a peaceful, permanent sit-in in front of the capital.
Yeah.
And two indie media observers went down as basically human rights observers to document the situation. And as internationals, we made the situation safer for the indigenous farm workers that were holding the state capital.
Yeah.
And we helped them translate just helped them out as much as we could to get their campaign, to get their voices heard. At that time, it was also a massacre, but an adjacent community was accused of committing the massacre, and they hadn't. And the state police had arrested, like, elementary and middle school age children, a 69-year-old woman, and accused them of committing this massacre that, in all actuality, everybody all around the country and throughout Oaxaca were very clear that it was the government that had committed the massacre in order to harvest terror in the community.
Yeah.
And it's a strategy that they use to scare people out of off of their own land.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I bet a lot of us are familiar with the Zapatistas right now in Mexico. Have they set out any response to what is going on right now, currently in the past few weeks?
I'm have some sort of response to it.
Yeah, they have.
Well, the Zapatistas have their own very particular situation. The main reason that often the media has chosen to focus in on the situation as well in Oaxaca is that the Zapatistas do get a significant more amount of attention, have a perpetual presence of international human rights observers, and are protected by weapons, right, their own weapons. And that keeps them safe.
Yeah.
Whereas these groups in Oaxaca, they're more like social organizations that are trying to follow the straight and arrow, so to speak, and not use weapons, right, and just organize socially, and they're being massacred, and nobody knows about them.
Yeah.
The Zapatistas are still, they're experiencing their own things. They're dealing with the Mexican federal army. They're dealing with Mexican federal police that are militarized. They're basically soldiers that just wear blue uniforms, and they call them cops, right? They're dealing with paramilitary. They're dealing with all sorts of situations of their own.
Yeah. So, basically what's going on right now, what actions recently, you can go to austinindiemedia.org and you can check out a few pictures that were posted up there, and I see, you know, what are people exactly doing currently?
Well, right now, we basically initiated what could be considered a pretty much makeshift human rights campaign that is working really well. We got a feature up on Global Indie Media that connects to the Austin Independent Media Center. And then through the Austin Independent Media Center, you can read more about it, find out more about it, and we gave people access to a letter that can be sent to the Mexican president, the Oaxacan state governor, the secretary of governance, the president of the Center for National Human Rights, the National Center for Human Rights in Mexico. And that way we can get them aware that people are watching. And other campaigns like this had already been initiated by European countries and Canada before the American campaign began, and we just put the American campaign together this last week, and it's starting to work. And as of today, Noam Chomsky, the MIT linguistics professor, said that he would endorse the project and actually gave some suggestions on how we could change up the letter a little bit to make it more official, and then
yeah,
endorse the campaign. So next week we're going to be going out and making sure that everybody's aware that Chomsky endorsed the campaign and used his name to get more support behind it and get people excited about it.
Yeah.
And I think what is interesting about it is that it gets to be a really great experiment in how an independent media center, whether it's IMC Center or anything else, can really use its privilege of technology to help out people without that sort of access.
Yeah.
It really affects some serious safety for people that are struggling to survive in their own country.
Yeah. So, with all this said, and with what knowledge we have currently about the effects of globalization, i.e. free trade, you know, things such as NAFTA, FTAA, and other groups such as the World Trade Organization, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank, organizations, groups, and things like that, have they influenced anything negatively nothing really positive, but has economic globalization been a part of, you know, what's going on right now?
Absolutely. I mean, it's basically the root foundation. Economic globalization is economic occupation. It's economic and political occupation. And because of the marketing of a monoculture in this country, the United States, which, i.e., consumer culture, right, it's a cultural occupation as well. Countries like Pakistan in 1996, for example, were barraged by Marlboro cigarettes and Coca-Cola, and Orthodox Muslims don't believe in taking any toxins into their body.
Yeah.
You know, and it had a serious effect on the community within weeks, right? Indigenous communities in Canada all of a sudden getting television and watching 90210 had a serious psychological effect. Billboards of skinny white women in southern Mexico talking about beer, you know, has had a serious
Yeah.
And so all those different, every theme that has to do with economic globalization has had a direct negative effect on all of these communities. I think in Mexico in particular, like I said, right next door, it should serve as the primary example of the success of economic globalization, and it doesn't. You know, that's where we really see a flaw. To me, Mexico really serves as like a key domino about to fall on the beast of imperialism.
I definitely see that. And with this, we were talking earlier about, you know, what exactly it has to do with the police state itself, such as, you know, what we see going on in Mexico, the police basically dressed in a blue uniform but holding, you know, a semi-automatic machine gun. And then you come back here at the home and you see some police are suppressing the urban areas of the town and, you know, just not creating a great place.
I attended the FTA protest in Miami, and I have an integrating footage that I got there into the film that is online right now on Austin Independent Media. The trailer is for the film.
Yeah.
And with this level of police brutality, I'm sure a lot of the listeners on this web stream will already know, was ridiculous. It was out of hand. It was out of hand.
Yeah.
So on that level, that's interesting. But when you start talking against free trade, then you're going to receive that level of brutality. And then the fact that free trade in and of itself is such an obscure concept to the general population of this country, and the wool is being pulled over everybody's eyes.
I see it as like it's, you know, free trade is this great thing. It brings jobs to our country. It brings, you know, our Western civilization to, you know, other types of countries that, you know. But what it does encourage is, you know, this expansion of imperialism, basically. That's all it does. And when big countries have control, multinational corporations, more than actually the countries itself, have control over small indigenous countries such as Mexico, Argentina, other countries that have greatly suffered from, you know, what we feel is great and what we feel is good and what the American public thinks is virtually harmless.
Yeah, absolutely. And talking about the American public, I mean, the American ghetto is a good example, is a damn good example of a violent occupation happening.
Yeah.
In any American ghetto, and you'll find a highway or a railroad or a river that divides it from the rest of the community. And little by little, that divider gets pushed further and further back, and people get pushed further and further out. And that occupation isn't just real estate. I mean, police play an active role in brutalizing communities out of their homes. Narcotics, which, I mean, it's very simple. I've never seen a young black man or an indigenous farm worker with a plane or a train or a truck or the connections to use free trade to his advantage to get those narcotics in this country in the first place.
Yeah.
None of those people are participating on that level. They're the only ones suffering on that level. So to me, it's a very clear, there's no question, there's no conspiracy, it's bias, the truth. It's a genocide. It's a genocide of communities of color and poor communities in this country. You know, because it's not just communities of color. I mean, you go to Peoria, Illinois, or you go to, you know, Omaha, Nebraska, there's a lot of communities of color, but there's a lot of poor people in this country. There's a lot of poor white people in Texas.
Yeah.
You know, that are being displaced, that are being pushed around and treated like because they don't fit into it. And that's what happened with the indigenous of Mexico. They don't even speak Spanish. So they can't be trained. They don't fit into market economics. So because they don't fit, they're eliminated. Especially when they live on land that is so rich in natural resources.
Yeah.
If you're a human that is less valuable than the natural resource upon which you reside, you're eliminatable. You're going to get killed. Genocide.
Yeah.
And the natural resource in the United States is real estate. You know, real estate, proximity to downtown. You know, the closer, you know, sooner or later, every town and every city in this country can't be developed anymore because downtown is jam-packed. And they start heading into the hood. They start putting up skyscrapers and Starbucks and bike trails and coffee.
If I can say something real fast, that's also where you notice the high concentration of military recruitment in those communities.
That's more genocide. As a matter of fact, today, all day, I was working with a theater group here in town called the Asociación Liberation Theater, working on a piece for youth about the recruitment of gangs and the recruitment of the military as one and the same.
Yeah.
You know, it's just another trap for youth of color in our country today, you know?
Exactly.
And that's what I try to learn, basically. When I learn about what's going on in Oaxaca, when I learn about what's going on with the Zapatistas, when I learn about the uprisings in Iraq, I think about how do these things apply in real terms in my country. And I'm not talking about throwing Molotovs at the cops just yet, but in my neighborhood, you know, where my kids are having a really hard time, where we have to figure out ways to deal with the police on a day-to-day basis, we figure it out. We start videotaping them and we start protecting ourselves and we start learning our rights and we start organizing. And, you know, that's what it's about.
Yeah. All right. Brian, real quick, we're going to take a music break and we'll be back. You are listening to FreeRadioDallas.net, and we're talking with Simone from Austin Independent Media Center. To get more information on what we're talking about, please visit austin.indymedia.org, and it's right on the front page there, and there's links to where you can contact officials in Mexico to give them your opinion. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back. Still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. So right now we're speaking with Simone. We're about to wrap things up. That was Against Me, Walking is Still On Us. And you are listening to FreeRadioDallas.net. And if you have any last minute questions, go ahead and instant messenger us. Our screen name is Free Radio Dallas. So if you want to go ahead and go about with the contact information to actually get stuff done and send letters, you can go ahead.
Okay. Right now on Indie Media's global site, www.indiemedia.org. We have, I think, the third or fourth feature down, and you'll see a logo that says COMPA on it, Fetal MPA.
Yeah.
And you can read the information there and basically inform yourself and all the links lead you to Austin Indie Media, which have a letter that you can email, basically, to the President of Mexico, the President of the Human Rights Commission, the Governor, and the Secretary of Governance, and urge for the release of these six political prisoners from COMPA, the Oaxacan anti-neoliberal popular Madonista coordination. That's the best we can do right now. We are going to have a continued heightened campaign, and if they are not released within a couple weeks, we have already put in a proposal with COMPA to initiate hunger strikes at Mexican consulates and the Mexican embassy in this country. So if you're interested, just keep up with us in the media. You can always write us and contact us if you want any more information.
Awesome.
And we'll keep everybody posted. Like I said, Chomsky just got on board, so on Monday we're going to send out a whole new letter and a whole new slew of things and try to put a package together to get more people excited about it.
All right, real quick, we had a... you kind of answered it, but I think he's more speaking in general terms. He says, what can I do, I guess, in suburbia, or living in suburbia, as a person living in suburbia, to help support the oppressed in Mexico?
Okay, well, I guess it wouldn't necessarily be a question of the poor oppressed in Mexico, but just the poor oppressed of the world, right? What can a person do in that position? Well, I guess your question is what can I do with my privilege, right? And
yeah.
I'm a Chicano American, right? And I consider myself to be very privileged. And what I do in order to deal with my privilege, and I encourage all people, whether they're privileged because they're white, or privileged because they're male, or privileged because they're wealthy, or privileged because they're bilingual, to just take responsibility for your privilege. You know, and if you take responsibility for your privilege and learn to contribute to the self-empowerment of others, right?
Yeah.
Learn to share what you have so that they can take it on their own and do what they need to do with it on their own without you being there leading their way, then you can really help a whole lot. Another thing, I mean, straight up, that a lot of people can do, especially in suburbia, is get out of the country, especially go down south here or south on the other side of the world, and learn about these communities and take some risks, you know?
Yeah.
That's something that I definitely encourage people to do, is first educate yourself. And then once you're educated and you're willing to bust out a video camera and put your body between some riot cops and some indigenous farm workers, you should do it. I think it's a really important way to keep safe and a really important way to globalize the struggle that we're engaged in.
I have a question.
Speak real close.
Oh, like relating back to the question.
I can barely hear you. If you could either get next to his mic or speak louder.
Oh, sorry. Relating back to his question about what can suburbanites do, there's a real strong tendency to like. Kind of throw money at certain NGOs or organizations that you might think are worthwhile. Like, in terms of, I don't know, being a kid here or having limited circumstances, what do you advise in terms of getting involved in the community? Or?
Well, I mean, I guess it's kind of difficult because I don't really have a direct... like sympathy or empathy with the situation. I've always been in a situation where I've been able to have access to a resistance, you know, in my own way. Or I didn't resist at all. I just was a punk-ass kid and I didn't do anything, you know? But I think that for youth, the most important thing for them to do is to educate themselves. And there's always something that is happening in your community, like especially in suburbia, like public schools in this country have serious issues, you know? And in suburbia, you know, the police can still be ridiculous. Sometimes they can get out of hand, especially with the kids. So I suggest kids to organize against that. And then and just plan so that when they get old enough to travel and so they can do things, you know, get out of suburbia.
God, yes.
I don't know what to suggest. I mean, I feel terrible, but the whole idea that your point about the NGO throwing money at NGOs, that is a very serious problem. There's a lot of greenwashing of resistance that I see going on more and more and more. And there's a lot of really crappy NGOs getting money from young Americans that aren't really doing anything to support any real resistances anywhere. So I definitely wouldn't advise people to throw their money at these bougie NGOs that are really talking a lot of crap and not getting anything done. As a matter of fact, the Zapatistas in 2003 released a communique about NGOs and a lot of the bad things that they had done in their communities and how they were cutting off several NGOs. They were just, you know, creating codependency. I mentioned contributing to the self-empowerment of communities. Like, that wording is a little complex, but it's done so purposefully because we tend to think, especially in activist communities, that we can empower somebody. I can empower the black community. I can empower the brown community. I can empower my neighbors. To empower it is inherently hierarchical. It's like you have the power and you're giving it or allowing somebody to have it. However, if you contribute to someone's self-empowerment, it's just that old thing of teaching somebody how to fish instead of giving them a fish. If you contribute, then they have something that they can take away, and it's not attached to you, it's not on strings, it's not something, you know, there's this old, like, anthropological analogy, right, that an anthropologist sees this poor community in Africa, and he wants to help them out, and he takes them a water pump, you know, because they don't have water, and he's pumping water out of them, out of the ground for them with this electric water pump, right? In 3 years, the water pump breaks, the Africans didn't know how to fix it. But by this time, they had been completely codependent. Three other villages around them that heard about the water pump started using only that as their main source of water. But now it's broken, and they can't do anything about it. So it's really important for people to be careful about how they help people and what they do to help people. And
yeah.
I just appreciate that point about the NGOs.
Well, real quick, while we're still just, I know we don't have much time, but real quick, just to, on a topic about what can you do, being privileged, I'd say, you know, examine, like, what kind of food you eat, what kind of clothes you wear, even, you know, whether you drink or smoke or whatever, look what kind of companies that you're supporting. If you smoke, you're really supporting tobacco's company that have been known to, you know, exploit using things like NAFTA. You know, even it can be like, look at what music you buy, you know, if these mega giant music labels are tied in with everything. So just examine how you live your life while you're very privileged. That's what I would say.
That's some good advice. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So we've been speaking with Simone from Austin Indie Media Center, and you're listening to FreeRadioDallas.net. I think we're about to wrap things up, so just any final comments before we let you go?
Y'all just keep on fighting the good fight, and don't give up. There's a lot of us all around the world that are fighting a common enemy, and we're coming together quicker and quicker.
Exactly. All right, well, we thank you for calling. Everyone, just to keep updated on late-breaking news, just check out AustinIndieMedia.org.
Thank you all. Have a good night.
All right, bye. All right, that was Simone from Austin Indie Media Center, and you are listening to FreeRadioDallas.net. We're going to go in here with a song. Tea Tree should be in here shortly. So this is, or it's one I wanted to hear, so give me time to find it. Wait, what was your name again?
Maya, I guess.
Maya, alright. And Maya's here with us, so. Yeah. I'm struggling to find music to play. Alright, this is another song by Fugazi. And this is Suggestion. So stay tuned. You're listening to FreeRadioDallas.net.
Thank you. interpretation
of what it is,
of what it is,
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 what it is.
Don't be
for RadioDallas.net. Alright, just real quick, we're recording this, so before I stop recording part one, to find this, please visit FreeRadioDallas.net and click archives, and that will take you to RadioForAll.net, which is the AAMFOS radio project, and also check out radio.indymedia.org. So let's stop this.